All-Stars and MVP consideration will be discussed on today's episode of the Snakes and the Diamond podcast. Wes and I are going to talk about the All-Star case for Christian Walker, Ketel Marte being the front runner for the National League MVP race, and Corbin Carroll's 19-game on-base streak and how it affects the Diamondbacks' offense. We'll discuss this on today's episode of the Snakes on the Diamond podcast. And welcome in, everyone. If you're having a good week, Diamondbacks, of course, so far have played 2 out of 3 against Washington at the time of this recording. I'm Michael McDermott. I'm the lead reporter for Burn City Sports, joined today by Wes Beyer. So, Wes, you excited for today's topics?
Well, if they're positive, which is always, you know, I'm down to talk about positive things, not so much negative things. Although that is kind of fun talking about fire sales, which, you know, that's a possibility, but I prefer this over that.
Yeah, I believe you on that one. All right. So
I think the real thing that needs to be said more than anything is that the Diamondbacks, after going to the World Series and winning a Rookie of the Year, might have a legitimate MVP candidate for the first time.
Yep, we'll discuss Ketel Marte and his MVP candidacy. So going into play Monday, Ketel Marte was top of the National League in baseball reference war at 4.0. That number has since gone up since he hit a 2-run homer in the first game. So are you surprised that Ketel Marte has kind of catapulted himself to the top, or do you feel like this is something that's been coming for years?
I am not surprised. I mean, it's never been a question that Ketel is his talent has never been a question. This is like a matter of like having all cylinders, you know, firing at the same time. A lot of that super high war lead comes from the fact that for the first time in his career, he's not just good offensively, he's good on defense too. Like the amount of work that he's put into, you know, just, you know, being he's been above, I don't know the exact numbers, you can pull them up, Michael, but he's above average defensively. He's been one of the best hitters he's taken his hitting to another level too, which I think adds to it. Like this is by far, I think the longest sustained hot streak from Ketel Marte. And it's just like everything's clicking for him at once. And at the same time, you have Mookie Betts went out with, he'll be out for the next, I don't know, six to 8 weeks with a broken hand. Shohei's not pitching. Both those are the real two contenders that I'm looking at same thing. Ronald Acuña Jr., of course, unfortunately out with an injury. So like the field's been very leveled and I think just things are all hitting at the right time with Ketel.
And we'll pull up the stats here for everyone to see. So this is Ketel Marte's baseball reference page. As you can see, 2024, which we have highlighted, you can see that the 4.2 war number has been highlighted. And I mean, it's not highlighted, it's bolded, which means Ketel Marte has the highest total for his league. So bold means highest total. And how it breaks down is Ketel Marte is putting up a lot of value on defense, and you can see his 1.5 D WAR leads all of Major League Baseball. So bold plus italicized means number one in Major League Baseball. He's credited with 12 fielding runs at second base. Seems like he's well on his way to get his first career Gold Glove at the position, which combined with Christian Walker at first base means there is no such thing as the four hole when playing the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, no, it's kind of remarkable. Like I never really, I mean, the biggest question in my, like, you know, has always been with him is, you know, one, maintaining the consistency of hitting at this level. Because I mean, he's capable of hitting at MVP level. He's shown that before. It's just sustaining that, you know, this applies to any MVP like candidate. I mean, the best example you really could give and previously is Paul Goldschmidt, about a decade ago, and then of course Luis Gonzalez's 2001, but of course they were both outshined by obviously in Gonzo's case much more historic years, but like, you know, any other year he would have won an MVP. Goldie's best year, he, you know, any other year he would have won an MVP. And I think, you know, Ketel, he's lucky that things seem to be breaking the right way. As long as, I think if he can sustain his production and stay healthy, you know, of course, the rest of the year, he stands a pretty good chance of actually, you know, taking home the first MVP award in D-backs history.
So yeah, looking further down National League leaders, you can see Marte obviously number one with WAR position players. He's third in offensive WAR behind Ohtani and Betts. Of course, Betts is going to be at 3-6 for a while.
That's why I say Ohtani not pitching, because if that man was pitching, this wouldn't even be, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
No. We'd be having the conversation, is Ketel Marte the best position player in the National League?
Yeah.
And of course, you pull up the WAR, you got some pretty good shortstops on this list, but Ketel Marte edging all those guys out. And we look at, and we're going to look at, one more thing we're going to look at here is, where is it? All right, we'll start here. So OPS plus, Ketel Marte is seventh in the league at 144. Dodgers seem to have the top three.
Yeah.
Top one. Yeah, Ozuna. So Ohtani's basically leading atop the leaderboards, but again, you're talking about plus fielding second baseman that's still top 10 in most of the offensive metrics compared to, I guess you could say, a DH-only player. And you can go into Atlanta, Marcell Ozuna's got the counting stats, leads the National League in home runs and RBI, so there's going to be a push for him, even though, as I said, an elite fielding second baseman on average is going to be more valuable than a DH for a club.
Yeah, because absolutely. I mean, he's above average. He's an above average player at a premium position versus a guy who's just on offense right now. I mean, the only thing that makes Shohei a perennial candidate is the fact that he's doing something that no one does at the same time, which is being an elite hitter and an elite pitcher. I mean, that's just, it's hard to compete with, like, literally a unicorn. If you look at that list, like Jurickson Profar, that's a kind of a surprise. But even then, if you, like, you know, your prospects, you remember kind of him breaking on the scene, the way he came up. I mean, it's not a surprise for him to eventually tap into the potential that scouts saw with the, you know, in him with the Rangers. And it's the same thing with Ketel. I mean, he's obviously been talented, even when he was in the Mariners farm system. So it's just, I think this is a matter of putting everything together at the right time. He's above average at premium position. He's offenses in the top 10. I mean, what more can you say? I mean, and he's also, like, he seems to be hitting at very timely moments too.
I mean, we always knew it was there because Marte had shown it in the past with the Diamondbacks. The 2019 season, he put up a pretty good year offensively. This year, he's kind of repeating those numbers while improved second base defense. Whereas in 19, I think he had to play a lot of center field because the team basically had no center field plan for AJ Pollock.
Yeah. It's the defense, I think, is the big key here. I'm muting my notifications there. The real key is, like, he's putting together defensively. I mean, he's been above average hitter, I think, throughout, you know, as long as he's healthy, he's a well above average hitter. And it's just like, I think, you know, having the consistency of, like, knowing what you're going to play, not being, you know, thrown in the outfield, not having to, you know, be moved around. I mean, that's actually, I think, a big factor in seeing a breakout in a player, is like going from instability to stability in your job.
And also being healthy. I think having healthy legs has also been a huge, huge plus for him.
Yeah, that's I think between the two, that's really, I think that's probably helped his defense and his, on both sides of, you know, it really is. Helped him this year. I think it's the healthiest he's looked in his entire career outside when the Diamondbacks first acquired him.
All right. So we'll go from one MVP and get almost a guaranteed all-star to another, Christian Walker. We're going to talk about if Christian Walker has a chance to appear in the all-star game. Walker ranks third amongst National League first basemen, wins above average on baseball reference behind Bryce Harper and Freddie Freeman, who almost seem like locks to go in. So do you think the National League will carry three first basemen in this All-Star game?
Probably not. Like, unless there's an injury to Harper or Freeman, I don't see Christian Walker necessarily. I mean, I could see the players selecting him, but that's pretty much a big ask. I don't see him getting voted in to pick, you know, if you're of all six people that are watching this, go vote for Christian Walker and Ketel Marte for the All-Star game at first base and second base. That would be great. But I mean, that's really what it's going to come down to is like the player vote. I think you know, it's one of those years that unfortunately is not quite good enough. I mean, I don't think he necessarily cares that much. He's having a career year, and his, you know, free agency walk year is not, that's not unexpected at all. I mean, we predicted that like on this podcast. So it's not, it's like one of those things, like he should be on the All-Star game, but it's not really a snub considering the season. Like we just saw Harper and Freeman ahead of him on that list, ahead of Ketel, which will tell you where they are at offensively. And then, Harper has been surprisingly good defensively since being moved over. I mean, he was kind of shaky there last year, but he seems like a more than adequate first baseman. I'm actually impressed by how quickly he's adapted. And, you know, Freddie Freeman, I think he's had a long, industrious career. It's one of those things. It's just like his career itself, you know, like it's not something that Christian Walker is, you know, not familiar with. He had to deal with this basically with his career of having guys ahead of him.
Yep, I would agree. So Walker having two All-Star level players in front of him didn't really get a chance until both were out of the way.
So, I mean, that's what it's going to take, is for Harper or Freeman to kind of get out of the way for him to make the All-Star team. So I don't think that's going to happen.
Because the way the All-Star thing breaks down, you have your starting nine players, and then the player ballot's going to determine who the reserves are. So you're going to carry at least a second player at every position. So you're going to have a second first baseman, catcher, shortstop, second baseman, third baseman, three more outfielders. And then there's going to be two at-large roster spots, which usually gets picked by the league. But I don't see the league putting Christian Walker in there, although it'd be a nice story to have because of what Walker had to go through to earn the success that he's had.
Oh, I mean, it is actually a great, I mean, MLB, if you're listening, this is a great PR storyline of a hardworking baseball player who's had to overcome adversity to, you know, reach the big leagues and is finally, you know, breaking out and reaching all his potential. And, you know, it's a great storyline. You have the access, go do it. It's a good story. And you know, I could see the league selecting him. It makes sense. I mean, he's well liked in the league. I actually could see the players putting on the ballot. I mean, there is a small chance that there's three first basemen on it. I wouldn't say that's like completely outside the realm of possibility considering how many, you know, pinch hitters happen in the game and replacements happen in the game. So maybe I don't know. I don't know what the odds are. I would imagine they're kind of low.
I mean, every team is going to have at least one All-Star player representing them. So it's going to come down to how many teams are not going to have position players. Like, for example, the Diamondbacks lone representative could be just Ketel Marte. Marlins don't necessarily have a position player that's going to qualify for the All-Star game. Same with the Pirates, although Paul Skenes will probably represent Pittsburgh at the All-Star game this year.
That's like actually that's a good example of what you usually see with a selection. You know, it's when the league is like, this is like, that's where I think it's most appropriate, when, you know, the league is like, oh hey, put this guy in the All-Star, you know, in the All-Star game as a rookie with a lot of talent, like, you know, a Paul Skenes. It makes sense to include him. I mean, the All-Star game is really more advertisement for the league and the, you know, the star players than it is anything else.
I mean, who's the biggest star in Pittsburgh?
Paul Skenes right now, by far. I mean, you can make an argument for, like, I don't know how they feel about O'Neill Cruz or...
No, Cruz is not going.
Or who else is on that team. I don't even know, like, what, Henry Davis, is he actually on the roster right now? I mean, that's the third we're at. It's the Pirates. Let's talk about the players on the Rockies that are going to make it while we're at it. Who's going to be their selection, Michael?
Weirdly enough, I think the Rockies might have more All-Stars than the Diamondbacks this year. Because you have to look at the positions in general, and I don't think it's a great year for third base in the National League, and you can look up these numbers on Baseball Reference as well. But kind of the thing that sticks out to me is, and we'll pull up third base, there should be a list. Trying to figure it out. It's on here. I'm trying where it shows
the NL sucks this year. That's really the key ingredient in this whole conversation is the NL is terrible. It's not just the Rockies or the Marlins. The whole, like, literally two-thirds of the NL is just absolutely mediocre. At best. Like, at best, they're mediocre. I don't know how else you would describe them, Michael, but they are not very good. This has been not good baseball so far.
Yeah, I don't see Matt. I'll have to double check on Matt Chapman. I think Chapman's obviously a candidate to go to the All-Star game.
Oh, yeah. He's actually turned around. I don't know what his current numbers are, but he's been on a hot streak, I think.
Yeah. Fortunately, the D-backs were able to contain him to some degree when they played. I think another dark horse candidate at the third base position is Joey Ortiz of the Brewers. He's off to a pretty amazing start for them, and that's why Milwaukee continues to win no matter who they trade and what they get in that trade.
I sometimes forget that the Brewers exist. I know who he is. I don't know how well he's done.
Yeah, I don't think Chapman's going to the All-Star game with a 691 OPS.
You're probably not.
So yeah, Ryan McMahon is... So Joey Ortiz, I think, is an option. Ryan McMahon might be someone the league puts in to make sure Colorado has representation. But because, remember, the initial 32 players in each league, there has to be at least one representative from each team.
Yeah. Yeah, and so Ryan McMahon is a decent, you know, I could see him being a representative of Colorado. I mean, I haven't really looked at their roster recently or their stats of who's actually having a good season. I know he was one of the few above average hitters on their team.
Yeah, 119 OPS plus for McMahon, 1.8 WAR on Baseball Reference. We'll pull, even though he's not the best player on the Rockies, that designation belongs to Ezekiel Tovar, who's going to get screwed because the National League has good shortstops this year. And when I say screwed, I mean he's only going to get screwed for five hours.
Yeah.
As soon as Betts is out, he's in. In my opinion, that's who should replace Betts for the All-Star game. 114 OPS plus at shortstop is pretty damn good.
One of the biggest issues I have with the All-Star game is that there's, like, by default going to be over representation. Like a team like the Dodgers, especially, like, they enter in a super large, or the Yankees are the two biggest examples right now. The two largest markets, the two largest fan bases who can absolutely affect the polling. And I would expect to see, like, an over representation of the Dodgers specifically this year.
Well, the only two fan bases I would accuse of stuff in the ballot box in the National League are the Phillies and the Padres.
Well, yeah, that's generally, you know, but Dodgers fans are generally well behaved, but they have a whole influx of Japanese fans that are following, you know, Yamamoto and Otani, and like that's a whole different mix of fan base of like Japanese internet baseball fans that are that obsessed that they vote for the All-Star game. You know,
they'll probably vote for Shohei, but no one's gonna argue that Shohei shouldn't start the All-Star game.
Why would you exclude Otani from the, like, why would you, like, even if he didn't, like,
exclude Otani. I'm talking about just voting for him.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, there's no way that you'd ever not win voting, all together.
And I think Harper's in first place at first base. But no one's going to argue if Bryce Harper should start the All-Star game.
It's a similar.
He's got similar numbers to Freeman.
That's why I don't
more think home that, runs though.
That's why I don't think that you're gonna have Christian Walker. It really is like you're gonna have Bryce Harper sit on the bench.
Or start.
And you're gonna I'm saying over like you're gonna have Christian Walker start. And you're gonna have Freddie Freeman and Bryce Harper sit on the bench. And like no disrespect to Walker. I think he's an all-star in like any other year. It's kind of ridiculous saying that out loud.
Yeah, and like I said, there's two extra non-position players. I think one's going to go to a shortstop because the Cincinnati. I'm not sure. I think Cincinnati is going to send Ellie De La Cruz. I kind of put like a half-baked list together. So obviously Betts is going to be the starting shortstop, but they're going to have to carry.
It's a weird, that's a weird thing for you to say. If you'd said this, like, you know, if you said that 8 years ago, people would look at you funny. Like, well, so Betts, Mookie Betts is going to be the starting shortstop for the 2024 All-Star game, the Dodgers. And I think Red Sox fans might have a stroke. Like, just if you explain to everything, if you as a future man to a 2016 Red Sox fan.
Just go back to March of 2020 to figure out how that works.
Yeah.
And the trade down.
I don't know how far back it was, but you just go back to 2019, 2018 before the signs were on the wall. And you just have, that's the fact that he's playing shortstop and a competent shortstop too, is just like, talked about before. It's still, it blows my mind. You know, even with context that Mookie Betts is now a shortstop and may start the All-Star game as the starting shortstop, which is just ridiculous. And I can't imagine how a time traveler would react to that one.
And before we say, well, Mookie Betts, somebody pops in and says, well, Mookie Betts isn't start during the All-Star game. It's like, we know that. It's just, he's going to be named the starter. And then third place guy at shortstop is going to take his roster spot, which I think should go to Tovar. I think Abrams will be named in by the league. So Washington has an All-Star. Oh, theoretically, yeah. Washington could send Mackenzie Gore to the All-Star game. And if you're watching this, you're probably watching Mackenzie Gore slice apart the D-backs offense.
Yeah.
Or had just watched that.
To the Nationals' credit, they got some good pieces through trades. Like, I really actually like the package that they got. You know, like, it's kind of panning out this year. You can kind of see that. You can kind of see those pieces working. You saw a little bit. I think you kind of see a little bit of flashes of Nationals improving.
Talking about the Juan Soto deal and James Wood.
Yeah.
And Mackenzie Gore coming in that trade.
Yeah, that's really what I'm talking about. Like that's paying dividends right now.
Yeah, and then.
But I could see that.
So the Mets are going to be a tough team to figure out who goes because there's no one really playing at an all-star level. I put Luis Severino as my pick. None of the Mets position players, in my opinion, deserve an all-star appearance. Although they may do the same crap as last year where they named Pete Alonso to the all-star team.
He
could be in the home run derby. I'm still salty. For the record, I am still salty about that Christian Walker got snubbed for Pete Alonso.
Yeah, I think that actually might be the biggest. I mean, it's not like Pete Alonso is. I mean, he's not having a great season at all, but it's not by his standards. He's not having a great season. But Christian Walker definitely should be like, I mean, if you're going to pick between the two, I'd pick Christian Walker because Christian Walker is the best defensive first baseman in the league right now. Just about.
Yeah, that's probably the difference between the two players. Like Alonso's OPS plus is pretty close to Walker's.
Yeah.
Although Walker's OPS plus would be 3 points higher if not for Jacob Young and for the Nationals.
Yeah.
But I digress. When you look, I'm looking at the Mets line and it's like looking at the Mets lineup. Alonso's obviously is the obvious pick. Lindor, I guess, could, but there are better shortstops in the league, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That are more deserving. Over Lindor, like, I'll take Tovar over Lindor, in my opinion. That's my opinion. You know who's going to be the worst snub for the... actually, I don't know if the player ballot will reflect this, but Bryce Turan could get snubbed out of an all-star appearance this year.
Yeah, that's the one that I really think could be the one. That's a very valid case.
He's basically Ketel Marte light to an extent. He's got three war. He's top five in war, and he might not be on the All-Star team. Now, of course, that could be wrong. If he gets in, there's no doubt that he should be in. Let me pull it up.
I have Fangraphs recently. I did an article on them before. Like I heard about that, and it's actually, you know, it doesn't help ever, you know, playing a small market team, like an actual small market team like Milwaukee.
So this is how Turan generates his value for the Brewers. 5 batting runs, 4 base running runs, 7 fielding runs.
Yeah, that's I think it's like he actually is one of the most likely snubs, probably.
Although right I would say there was a time where Bryce Terang was considered the number one overall pick in his draft class. And then everyone soured on him for some reason. And the best thing that happened to him was falling right into the Brewers, who are probably one of the most underrated franchises at developing homegrown talent.
You know what? He actually, that's probably the best outcome for him, was, you know, landing an organization like the Brewers.
I mean, because if you look at the numbers across the board, he's got a 352 on base percentage, hitting .285, 26 of 28 in stolen bases. He's not stealing bases. He's stealing bases efficiently. If you look at Terang,
it's worth noting with any kind of statistic that we talk about that's offensive, this is like one of the worst years offensively league wide in the last 10 to 15 years. I think like what it is.
Yeah, it's because teams aren't valuing defense as much as they used to. That's just how it is.
It's the you know, the game has its ebbs and cycles in terms of like what they prioritize over. So everyone's always looking for an advantage. So it's like, oh well, you know, for a while, teams were you know, they're valuing defense, overvaluing it, and then players that had, you know, less defensive value became the new commodity, and that's just like, you know, the game goes on. It's like on base percentage was overvalued as a result of Moneyball.
Well, I mean, on base percentage is valuable no matter what year or era it is. It's one of those stats that always
it'll never change. Okay, but it was just like the whole league had figured out that okay, hey, maybe a walk is just as good as a single sometimes.
But nobody on base certainly is.
You know, it's just one of those things that is just like the league has moved back. I will, excepting the Rockies and a few organizations that are very poorly run. The league has accepted, like, you know, a lot of the concepts that came out of, you know, like really the sabermetrics has been pretty much implemented in every single organization now. Like this, you know, peer modeling, all that, like using like data systems and more advanced statistics, where every team has their own, you know, statistical model that they use pretty much. And if you don't have one, that's why your team is in last place.
And I'll just say this, there's always a value for a Jake McCarthy, Bryce Terang type player. They might not hit the ball out of the ballpark, but what they do well, and by the way, those two players have combined for 7 home runs this season, but those are guys that hit well, spray the ball over the field, hit a lot of singles, walk a lot. Yeah. Although, let's see, Terang's walk rate's a little, I think Terang's walk rate's like 9%, which is fine. Walk above average clip. They don't strike out.
There's some things that like they shouldn't, and they can, you shouldn't change the value of them. You know, like you see, like they both, I mean, yeah, okay, Jake McCarthy is not a flashy player unless he's like, you know, doing his Jake hustle. His Jake hustle, okay. But other than that, like he's not like the flashiest player. And it's the players like him were just like, if you factor in just like the work ethic is a big part of it. It's like a player like Jake McCarthy has worked very hard to get to the major league level.
I actually have a funny joke. Jake McCarthy ended up being what I thought Dalton Varsho was going to turn into, and Dalton Varsho turned into what I thought Jake McCarthy was going to be.
Yeah, that actually is a very accurate assessment. That's funny. If you're a D-backs prospect town, all 15 of us, I think, worldwide.
Yeah, I mean, both are going to end up being good, very, very good players.
Yeah, no, they really, that's the thing. Speaking of you know, I think it's a good point to move on here to the next segment of Corbin Carroll has turned it around finally.
So yeah, Corbin Carroll has reached base in his last 19 starts. And then we have the numbers here, hitting .311 with a .414 on base percentage, 8 extra base hits and .860 OPS since May 29th. Kind of the thing that stands out for Carroll, obviously, beyond just the on-base streak, we're starting to see those extra base hits. Not quite yet in the home run department. I think that's a launch angle issue. But he is smoking line drives 100-plus miles an hour all over the ballpark, and that's leading to doubles and triples.
I mean, it seems like since the month, I mean, if you look at it month by month, he was absolutely terrible in March and April. Slightly better in May. I mean, I think a lot of that is propped up by like 2-3 games at the end of May, if I remember correctly. And then, you know, the month of June, he's well above average. I mean, he's like back to Corbin Carroll. It's like he's first wore off at, you know, midnight on May 28th, and he's back to the rookie of the year, you know, award winning Corbin Carroll that we know, you know, who he is. Like, yeah, you're right. That launch day, it seems like there's been a couple balls that he's hit over the last like week or two that it's like not quite. Like, if he had just gotten the launch angle just, you know, right in the timing right, it would have been a home run. And there was, it definitely seemed like in May that he was hitting a lot of those, you know, just missed kind of, you know, fly balls. And it seems like it's got timing back down. The launch angle is not quite there yet. But I mean, he's really, I mean, it's not a great sample size. We're looking, you know, only with like 20 games, really. But, I mean, he looks like he passes the eye test. He looks a lot more similar to what he, you know, how he hit and, you know, how well he was hitting. You know, like, you know, if you look at the side by side last year from, you know, like his best swing from last year versus what he was doing in April and May, like, they're completely different. Like, it's really, there actually is quite a difference between what he was doing earlier in the year and what he's doing now. I'm not really, like, you know, there was the question of like, should they send him down eventually? And that's, you know, they didn't have to do that. I'm not, you know, like, it's at that point, it's like, he's a key player that the Diamondbacks need his bat. Like, that's what I've been saying pretty much all year for them to turn around. They need to have, you know, an ability to, like, first of all, get Corbin Carroll. If he's going to be the leadoff batter, he needs to be hitting like someone who you want to have leading off, because at the Corbin Carroll with a 62 and a 72 WRC plus for, so it's like, you're that percentage below 100. If you're not familiar with the statistic. You don't want to give that guy that many at bats. He's below average. You could pick a random guy from the, you know, your minor, you know, on your 40 man roster who can probably do better. At least that's the way it should be. So, I mean, if he's got his, you know, like, if he's hitting the way he should be, that's one less thing to worry about. And, you know, you start getting these guys back. I mean, if they could build some momentum, I don't think they're going to take, you know, the division, but certainly be in a position for the wild card now.
And I just want to quickly correct this. When Wes says pick up any random hitter from AAA, we're talking about a replacement level hitter, but a replacement level hitter is not going to put up a 100 WRC plus, most likely. That's league average.
But I mean, at the point where you're having a 62 or a 72, that is a random guy from AAA though at that level. Like, you could call up. Trying to think. I mean, the defense.
Albert Elmore Jr. in his career 80 OPS plus.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, like, that's really, like, if it's not exemplary, those are really bad for, you know, someone that you're gonna lead off. It's that's one of the, like, I beg to disagree. There are people currently on the 40 man, you know, in the minor leagues that could probably hit better than that. Like, Davison and De Los Santos, if he's hitting like he has this year, I think that he could probably easily beat that. Okay, you could, Adrian Del Castillo, I think he could do it. The guys that you would consider calling up on the Diamondbacks roster, I think they could do that. I think they could beat Corbin Carroll at his worst.
Yes, but none of those guys can play the outfield.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, there's caveats to it. Whatever. Random average, yes. People should realize, Michael, that when we talk about replacement level, like, the expectation should never be like, oh, he's going to be like a 100 OPS, you know, 100 WR, like, perfectly average. Like, that's not the way reality works, and you should never have that expectation of the game, because it's like, you're gonna be disappointed.
Yeah, I was gonna say, even Thomas is a question. Yeah. Well, Thomas would be a replacement level outfielder once he's healthy, a replacement outfielder, but then again,
he's better than that. He was in the 80s. That's the thing, Thomas? Even if we're talking about Thomas last year, okay? Thomas, when he was not being good, when he was in the bad version of Thomas, okay? he still had like a better WRC plus at the very least. I don't usually use OPS.
No, it was around that. It was actually in that range.
It was like I think his worst he was in that range, but he brought it up to like an 86 or, you know, he was in the 80s is when he's doing good. So, I mean, all defense. It's a bad example. Like, he's like a defensive specialist, basically. You put up with his bat because he's so good.
I mean, if you got 85 out of Thomas, you could justify playing him, but.
Oh, yeah, you can live with that. And the Diamondbacks have lived with that. But you can't live with a 62 WRC plus at the top of your lineup for, you know, 500 or 600 at bats. That's just, you know, a little excessive in my opinion.
Well, I mean, Carroll's not that type of hitter. I mean, worst case scenario, I still think he's going to finish the year at 100 at worst.
Yeah, I think so. If he can hit above average like this for the rest, like if he continued June hitting this hot and he hits July and, you know, the rest of the season, actually, I think that actually would be enough to bring it up to, I don't know how healthy he'd have to hit the cover off the ball for the rest of the season, actually bring it up to his previous rookie of the year level. I think it will be down, but I mean, it's not, I want to rule out the possibility. Stranger things have happened in a baseball season.
Yeah. I have to compare the numbers, but looking at Corbin Carroll since May 29th, his average launch angle is 6 degrees. Compared to his season average, which is 9.9.
I need a visual to like visualize that, like what the difference is. It's one of those things that like I'm not familiar enough with people's launch angles to be like, okay, well, this is what that looks like. But I mean, actually, there is a visual difference if you're watching a game, you watch it like highlights at the very least. But you pick a highlight from earlier this year versus now, like there is an actual visual difference.
By the way, if you're wondering why Carroll's numbers are so bad, just look at his pop-up rate, and I'll put that up on the screen as soon as my computer stops scrolling. But pop-up rate of 12.4%.
Yeah, that's bad. That's bad. This is bad.
That has to come down.
I mean, popping up to me like is one, like usually. For a good hitter, I think that's more of a timing issue generally. On the bad end, it can be like you're being overpowered and you're just like, you know, like you can't get your timing right no matter what. I don't think that's the case. I think it really has been a timing issue most of the year.
I think it's been a swing path issue as well. Kind of got flat.
Yeah, he definitely, his swing looks flattened out compared to like, you know, like a good, like even just on it, like you look like him hitting a single versus this year versus last year, like his swing still looks flatter to me.
Yeah, it's hard for me to tell unless you have side shots. But anyways, I have the StatCast data from May 29th onward to share. So with Carroll, sitting 314, but the X stats don't necessarily paint a sustainable picture. Although, again, an X weighted on base average of 338, we will take that the rest of the year for sure.
Yeah, I think even he can recognize that there's room for improvement. And I think it's, you know, like, I think a part of the problem is there is a lot of, you know, even if no one has put any pressure on Corbin, I think at the very least he's probably put pressure on himself with, like, you know, injuries, you know, the pressure from following up rookie of the year, going to the World Series, you know, people, like, I mean, it's the amount of injuries the Diamondbacks got is not helping. I know, like, there's that subconscious pressure, you know, pressure you put on yourself when you're playing a sport of like, okay, I need to step up for my teammates, and every guy is doing that on the team. I don't think it's just something that only he's doing. It's something that, like, literally, if you're competitive with a sport, on a team sport, you're gonna step up when one of your teammates, you know, is incapable of, you know, for whatever reason, of, you know, being there when they need to be, with injuries or, you know, just not coming through in a hitting situation or whatever it is. And I think that, you know, he's still a very young guy. Like, we forget that sometime. Like, this makes tons and tons of money, more money than you and I will probably ever make. And that's something people forget. Like, these guys, like, they're still, he's still like 25.
Carroll's
23 still. Yeah. He's like not even, he's young. He's a young guy. And we forget that, you know, like if you think back to your youth, like most people are, you know, that kind of things, like you might not think of it as an adult as something that would affect someone, but you know, he's still, he's still growing. You keep growing until you're 25, or at least your brain does. So one of those things that, like, I think that is very, it is very likely for some of the younger players on the team when they have struggles in the sophomore season, or, you know, struggles after success. Some of that is just from putting pressure on yourself. You have no one putting any pressure on you.
Yeah. So Carroll's pop rate since May 29th is 8.2%. So it's coming down.
Maybe he's been trying not to pop up, and then, like, you know, by actively trying not to pop up, he pops up. Because that's what I do when I hit. I'm like, don't pop up, don't pop up, don't pop up, and then you pop up.
You know what my coach always said, garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah. I mean, you can't be doing that. Can't be balking. The first rule of a balk is you can't balk.
Yeah, that is a good first rule.
Yep.
All right. So, before we conclude, you want to talk about what the possibilities in play are once Alec Thomas hits the IL. Of course, we don't know when that's going to... gets off the IL. Well, we're not entirely sure when that's going to happen because they had to press the pause button on Thomas's rehab today, this week, so...
Yeah,
I'm not sure exactly when that's going to happen, but we can still talk about it.
I mean, we don't have any information on, like, the medicals from it. I'm going to assume that any kind of MRI he has, or, you know, imaging comes back clean. I think the earliest we're probably going to see him come back is the third week of June, probably. I think that's probably
this is the third week of June.
No, I mean third week of July. My bad. It's gonna be like a month out from now, probably, before we see him actually in a Major League Baseball game. It's gonna take a couple weeks for him to get the back going again and get everything get cleared to play in the first place, because obviously they've kind of paused his rehabilitation. And I write off a player when they're on the IL long enough. It's like, as soon as there's complications, you really cannot, you can't make a predictive, you know, timeline. So it's like, okay, so I know this guy has this X injury and he's going to be back in 6 to 8 weeks. And then you get to week 7 and they're like, wait, no, it's actually going to be another, you know, it's like, at that point, what do you do? Like, I mean, I write it off. Once he is healthy, I would think that they're going to send down, who are current outfielders in the rise?
I don't think they're going to send anyone out of their current out. You can't send Jake down. Why would you send down a 280 hitter?
Yeah.
With a 370 on base percentage. Maybe that's why they lost the second game of the Nationals. They should have started him.
Yeah, maybe.
I could, of course. McCarthy would have been turned into a pretzel by Corbin. But
I'm not really sure who you would, you know, who it would probably be one of the, a pitcher or a bench player.
They're not going to send a pitcher down. They only have 13 pitchers, and they're supposed to have at least 13 pitchers.
So yeah,
they cannot send down a pitcher. I think what they'll do is they'll send Blaze down to AAA.
Yes, he's got options. It makes sense for them to do that, I guess. I think Blaze is earned. I mean, that's what they do. I'd have to look at the roster and see, like, you know, and recent performances to actually, like, give you like a good answer. But I mean, pretty much it just comes down to who has the options and like who's hot at the time. It's really, I think it's going to come down to, if you can't send out a pitcher, that's what you're going to do. There's the unlikely chance that they make a trade. They could trade away Suarez. They could, you know, make a move there. They could, you know, there's always something like that. I mean, we are coming up to the trade deadline. Sometimes Mike Hazen will make moves, you know, even when he's not really you know, does sometimes they'll make moves just to make a move, though, you know? So I could see that happening. But, you know, probably sending down Alexander, it makes sense.
Yeah, they're not going to trade Suarez while they feel like they are still in it and there isn't a move they can make at the position. Because despite those struggles, he is their best everyday option at the best option at the position most of the time.
Yeah, that's, you know, he's not really, like, there's not like a lot of options at that point.
And it's,
Like Blaze is a tough decision, but sometimes you got to do that.
Yeah, it's not like Suarez is struggling. He's slowly coming back from that struggle. He's getting on base, drawing his walks, hitting line drives. Now, we haven't seen the home runs necessarily again, but it's like you got to start from somewhere. It's the same thing with Corbin. It's like the home runs will eventually happen once you get the confidence back in there. You feel like you're going to do it.
Yeah, Suarez at this point, I think he's probably done after this season. Like, I wouldn't offer him a qualifying offer or anything like that.
$2 million and tell him to leave. $2 million and tell him to leave.
There's better options that you can go with him. If they think they can, that's why I actually think that it is actually in Mike Hazen's. If they're out of it, that's the possibility where I see that happening is they trade him. They picked another, you know, week or two of, you know, they need to lose quite a few games for us to get at that point. Because they really, like you just said, they don't have a lot of options at third base. There's not a lot of options. The only reason why that's even on the table is that there's just not a lot of options league-wide for third baseman. Especially that's a veteran presence. It's kind of a known quantity, too. I mean, that's the only unfortunate thing is that he's not, I mean, either if he was hitting how we all wanted him to, that wouldn't even be an option. We'd probably be completely, you know, much, you know, in a much better position in the wild card race and all that. So, I mean, really, Mike Hazen's going to have to make a tough decision, send down a Blaze Alexander or someone else who, you know, might not necessarily deserve being sent out right now.
It's also possible they could just say McCarthy's hitting too well. We just don't have room for Thomas in the outfield. That's one option, although I don't see that happening, but that is a possibility. There's no guarantee that Thomas will get the starting center field job back.
I mean, if he comes back and he does terribly, then that's one of the reasons why you do want to see him ring out in AAA and, you know, get some. Thomas, I mean, the unfortunate thing is he actually was looking really good before he went down an injury and finally kind of tapped into his potential as a prospect. But there is no guarantee that he comes back from this and he's like, you know, hey, this timing and everything down right. I mean, he could have an 0 for 50, you know, 2 weeks of just hitless streak. That happens. It's bizarre when it does, but like that does happen. It's not, you're going to call up a guy who's like 0 for 30. Probably not.
I mean, it's hard to tell, but like I said, they're pausing the rehab with him. He would have come back on Tuesday if they hadn't had the posit. So he was nearing a return. They would have had him play the rest of the week with Reno and then call him up for the series. I think now they have to probably push it back another week. So we're talking, let's see, Sunday would be. So we're probably talking like July 2nd at the latest. Make a decision to keep to roster him or not.
I mean, it really, like, it'll depend on, you know, if he's like healthy and it, you know, like they restart the rehab and it goes well. But yeah, that seems like a likely timeline. I think I don't really expect any timeline like that. Like it could go either way. Like if you're counting on a guy who's currently not healthy to be healthy, you can't force to rush that. Like we've seen with Eduardo Rodriguez, he's had, you know, several setbacks. It's like I have no expectation of him contributing at all necessarily this year.
Well, from last we heard, I think Torrey said that he was gonna get on a mound next week or something like that. So I'm thinking post All-Star break with Rodriguez, Merrill Kelly, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the timeline based on the information we're given. And Zach Gallen's going to be back. I have June 29th circle as Zach Gallen's return from the IL.
I mean, my hope is that they all have, like, you know, much better timelines than, you know, like, we don't have to be pessimistic. The most optimistic timeline happens with each of these guys. They come back in the next month. They kick ass. The Diamondbacks have a World Series run, and they actually win it. With, you know, like that's the scenario I'd like to see. I don't think it's particularly likely, but You know, if that happens, that's pretty cool. If, you know, they don't contribute at all, the Diamondbacks have a, you know, poor season, it sucks. But, you know, they can hopefully, I mean, look at like Eduardo Rodriguez, he's going to be here, you know, next season. I would hope that he, you know, is healthy at that point. I would be a terrible situation if he doesn't, you know, pitch this season. I don't expect that necessarily either. I just think that, you know, expecting him to come back and being like, you know, the best version of him is necessarily going to happen. I think you can't really expect that.
I would say you're probably looking at least one more month of relying on Ciccone and Nelson to get you through the season. And if their last start is any indication, if they can repeat those type of starts, I think they'll be okay.
I mean, the team looks like it's turning a corner, you know, as of late. It's just, you know, every time it looks like they're turning a corner, they just kind of they lose a game to the Nationals or, you know, a team that they really shouldn't be losing against.
It's kind of obvious how they win, and when they don't get that happening, it's obvious they're unable to win in a situation. It feels like they need to hit that haymaker early in the game in order to win.
I think to some level they play to their opponent's talent level. Like, they don't always play consistently to the level of talent that they actually have. Like the Diamondbacks, when they're playing the Dodgers and they're playing a team that they know is good, they play better. They do. That's why I think one of the reasons why they had a World Series run is this team like plays to the competition level of what they're playing. And, you know, they can, when you're playing the worst team in the National League or the AL, they're going to play like one of the worst teams. And I mean, it's just observation bias, but or confirmation bias, something like that. But I mean, it's just, they do kind of have that vibe sometimes.
Diamondbacks are 6-12 against teams that have a 500 record or better, and three of those wins are against the Dodgers.
Yeah.
And then they also haven't played a lot of teams over 500, only 18 games.
What's the record against below 500 teams?
Well, they're two games under 500, so they're four games over, so 30 and 26.
Okay. I mean, that's, you'd like to see, I mean, this is the thing, is that it's pretty mediocre for a team that's talented, and it's kind of, no health and all that has been a factor. And like, you know, you have, you know, unfortunately, some sophomore slumping from certain players. It happens. I think that, you know, it's like that amazingly they're still in it. You know, thankfully the NL sucks, like we said. I think that, I mean, there's not really, I mean, that's the main story. I mean, Corbin Carroll turning it around is a big deal. I mean, like a lot of these decisions, it's like we cross the bridge when we get there. That's how I view it. It's like, I'm not going to worry about Erod or what, you know, what any of them are that are on the IL are doing until they're actually healthy. It's really irrelevant.
And we know Ketel Marte for 2 weeks at a time can carry a ball club. As you mentioned, the MVP thing. And when Christian Walker's smashing home runs, it feels like the D-backs are going to score 10 runs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing is if you just get those three players really going to just like their bare minimum of like, you know, of like the guys that we've come to really know, like if you get those bats going, like they're the team that we saw in the World Series, especially if you can get those guys healthy to come back. Like, we've already seen the impact that Perdomo has had coming back to some extent. I think he's a key you know, table setter for the team to some extent, and like just a great defensive presence, and like, you know, having that as a reliable, you know, one less guy to worry about. And that's kind of what you need from the season at this point, is every guy to be someone you don't have to worry about when it's like, oh, hey, we know Erod's going to go every fifth start or every fifth game. When you know Merrill Kelly going, you got Zach Gallen, all, you know, they're all healthy. You have Alex
Paul Sewald, you know the ninth inning is in good shape.
Yes, exactly.
Ryan Thompson, you know the eighth inning is in good shape.
Yeah.
Justin Martinez, the seventh inning is in good shape.
So it's a frustrating, I know, for a lot of people to see a team. It's like, it's super frustrating for me. It's one of the reasons why, like, if the Diamondbacks are really terrible, I don't watch the games. I'll just, like, read the box scores. But, I mean, that's just, they're just right within reach of being a super good team, the one that we talked about before the season started. And unfortunately, it hasn't quite gone the way we thought it would. You can never predict health.
I mean, here's the thing. It only takes 2 weeks of excellent play to get in. The way this National League wildcard race is set up, and we saw that play out last year when the Diamondbacks smoked the Cubs and the Giants to basically clinch their trip into the postseason.
Yeah, I mean,
is it 8-9 against those two teams?
Yeah, I mean, really, that's, they just need to keep building on what they've done so far. I mean, like Corbin Carroll, I mean, that's a great example. If you look at, he's had, like, as the season's progressed, it's got better. It's kind of what I want to see from the rest of the team.
Yeah, I think, and then all of you, I forgot to mention this, but Lourdes Gurriel Jr. seems to be stringing together a lot of hits. So you have him going behind the trio of Carroll, Marte, Walker, plus what Jock does in between. You can put up some crooked numbers. That's how they've been putting crooked numbers on teams.
I mean,
their 1-5 hitters can beat the crap out of a pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, it's, that's the thing, is that the offense, when they get going, I think that's, you got a good point with the, when they don't get the offense going early, it's definitely been a struggle for them to win those games. They're not scoring early, scoring often. The games that, I will, take note of some of the crooked scores, and it's like, okay, well, that, I'll look away for a minute, and it's, went from 2-0 to, 10-0. That's kind of, that's what you like to see. They can't rely on that, though, and that's really why you need to get all these kind of players healthy in the roster to where, they intended it to be. And I think it's within reach. I'm not writing off the Diamondbacks at this point. It's very winnable. NL West. The NL West, to some extent, is winnable right now, too. I mean, the Dodgers have Yamamoto out, and they have
Mookie. That's going to be out long enough to make an impact, too.
Yeah, that's both of them, actually, are probably going to be out long enough to make an impact, and that's significant, not just for, the MVP race, as we were saying earlier, but the NL West is actually quite winnable right now. The Dodgers, I mean, yes, they're a really well-built team. They have a lot of depth. I'm sure that they have guys that can step up in there, they're not going to lose that many much games, but they're Diamondbacks are the closest that they've been,
The Dodgers in a decade.
Yeah, that's the thing. They did briefly lead the NL West last season, I think at the end of
May. Yeah, they were first place a year ago.
Yeah,
actually, they had first place lead going into July.
Yeah, so I mean, there's at this time last year they were winning the NL West. The NL West looks winnable again. Probably the most winnable is going to be, for the years to come. I mean, the season can go any way. It's up to them. Just got to watch the game, see what happens. Expect the worst, hope for the best. And that kind of sums it up for me.
So even if it is. Even if the division might not be winnable for 162 games, the difference between the two teams, as we saw last year, it's all it takes is one series. D-backs are good enough to beat the Dodgers in a 5-game series.
Yeah. I think the team's actually built better for the postseason than it is the regular season. It's just pretty much, there's no question about it. They're more experienced coming through it. I mean, it's really, that's, I don't have much thoughts on it at this point.
Yeah, I think it's just a consistency issue why it shows up in the postseason. I think also the rest days in the postseason helps.
Yeah,
as well.
I think that. But I mean, you just have to be hot. As long as you don't get the bye. I think that's actually a big factor. Royals fans actually should be hoping that they don't overtake.
Cleveland,
they don't overtake Cleveland because actually that they might be the AL front runner in my opinion, where that team is built. Like, I know people talk about Yankees, but the Royals are looking really hot, and that's the thing. A team that looks really terrible can look,
not good playing next for 5 days,
and vice versa. And that's the thing, is you just gotta, if they make, all they gotta do is get to the postseason, get hot, and that's it. Hopefully not have a week off if you're a division winner. So
I mean, also it depends on the style of the team. Like the Braves ran through the Phillies last year. Dodgers were pretty vulnerable last year, and Diamondbacks had a better starting rotation entering that series. That if they won Zach Gallen-Miller Kelly's start, it felt like the series was going to be a wrap. If Vaught didn't completely blow game three. So I think it's kind of one of those statistical year oddities. We'll see how that plays out. I think when we get more sample size with the six playoff teams in each league.
Yeah, it's been a weird season so far in general. It's like, you know, there's some oddities in terms of like the offensive environment, the amount of injuries league wide. It's a long season. We're kind of in the dog days of summer now.
Dog days of summer, the NL wild card isn't separating despite.
Yeah.
It's going on. So it's going to come down. It's going to end up being a pretty ugly trade deadline. And we'll probably talk about that in a future episode. So any concluding remarks before we go?
No, I think, you know, like I said, you just, like, of course, you know, don't go with the expectation that the Diamondbacks are going to, like, everything's going to go right, and they're going to, you know, the Dodgers are going to suck, and they're going to win the World Series, because that's, like, if you really can accurately predict that and, like, go win some bets, okay? But, I mean, like, all they just got to do is just have things go the right way, get some of these guys healthy, and then, you know, they stand a good chance of taking the division, or at least, you know, making another run. They just got to get into the postseason again.
All right. So anyways, thanks everyone for watching. If you enjoyed the podcast, make sure to leave a review. If you're listening in on Apple, Google, or Spotify, if you're watching the YouTube VOD, make sure to leave a like, subscribe, and comment what you think about Ketel Marte's MVP candidacy, whether Walker should be an all-star, or you think Corbin Carroll is fixed. Let us know.